From the Cyber Hub bunker in studio, you're tuning in to the Cyber Hub podcast. And now for your host and CISO, James Azar.
Good morning, security gang. Welcome to another episode of the Cyber Hub podcast. It's great to be with all y'all this Wednesday morning. We're catching up from Patch Tuesday yesterday and so much more on the show. So don't go anywhere. Now, first of all, if you haven't subscribed to the show, please make sure to do so. We air live Monday through Thursday at 9 a.m. Eastern with all the latest and greatest, giving you the latest cybersecurity news in under 15 minutes is always the goal, not always the result. So with that being said, got a packed show. Check us out on Google, Apple, or Spotify, wherever you catch your podcasts, or also on YouTube, LinkedIn, Twitch, Twitter, now X, Facebook, and anywhere else you get your favorite content. And now without further ado, again, traveling, found an espresso spot, didn't have a chance to go grab one before the show. It's been one of those mornings. So with that being said, coffee cup cheers to all of y'all having a sip of coffee with me this morning. And let's get into the show because we've got a lot to talk about. Coffee cup cheers, y'all. So a team of researchers from IBM and the VU Amsterdam University in the Netherlands disclosed new details of a new type of data leak attack impacting all major CPU makers. It's been dubbed the name Ghost Race. It's related to what researchers describe as a speculative race condition, SRCs. Such an attack could allow a threat actor to obtain potentially sensitive information from memory, including passwords and encryption key that are stored in memory. But it typically requires physical or privileged access to the targeted machine, and practical exploitation is in most cases not trivial, meaning this isn't something you have to worry about. It is something that is possible if the threat actor has the right intent. And it's important that when we see stories like this and we see these headlines and we go, what do they actually mean? And it goes into kind of security by design that CISA has been talking about for the last several years under the leadership of Director Jen Easterly, is the idea that you've got to really move away from the traditional way, and security's got to be at the design aspect and not just the execution aspect of anything you do. And that also includes semiconductors in this case as well. So operating systems use synchronizations, primitive to avoid race conditions. Typically, this is all, again, done kind of in the firmware side of the house. The key finding is that common synchronization primitives implemented using conditional branches can be micro-architecturally bypassed on speculative paths using a Spectre V1 type of attack. Spectre, a very old attack, about four or five years. So, you know, how old really is that? And so in order to launch an attack and win a speculative race condition, execution of the victim process must be interrupted at the right point and kept there to allow the attacker to perform what researchers described as a speculative concurrent use after free type of attack, also known as SCALF. They achieved this using a new technique called inter-processing interrupt storming, IPI, which involves flooding the targeted process CPU core, similar to a DDoS attack. A scan of gadgets in the Linux kernel led to the discovery of nearly 1,300 potentially exploitable gadgets. The researchers demonstrated a SCALF information disclosure attack on a Linux kernel, achieving a 12 kilobytes per second kernel memory leakage. So not a lot, but nonetheless, Intel, AMD, ARM, and IBM were all notified of the Ghost Race attack in late of last year, and they in turn notified OS and hypervisor vendors, all of which allegedly acknowledged the issue and are working in their own ways to address it. The underlying CVE for Ghost Race vulnerability is 2024-21903, and then the IPI storming piece is CVE 2024-26602 for those looking for that information. U.S. law enforcement seized around $1.4 million worth of Tether tokens believed to have been fraudulently obtained through tech support scams. As part of the alleged scheme, which mainly targeted the elderly and most vulnerable people across the U.S., victims were targeted with pop-ups claiming their systems have been compromised. And that's, again, something that we talked about several weeks ago when the FBI disclosed $12.3 billion were stolen, lost by the U.S. and stolen by essentially cybercrime, with a predominantly of them being tech support scams on the elderly or government scams on the elderly, meaning they're pretending to be the government. Sorry, and that's $12.5 billion, not $12.3 billion, as I stated a moment ago. The University of Stanford says personal information of around 27,000 individuals was stolen in the ransomware attack that impacted its Department of Public Safety network on September 27th of last year. The incident was disclosed a month later. The investigation is now wrapped up, and it determined that unauthorized individuals gained access to the Department of Public Safety network between May 12th of last year and September 27th of last year, meaning they were in the system for a bit over 4 months, according to the university. According to the data breach notification filed with the Maine Attorney General, the attacker stole documents containing PII belonging to 27,000 individuals. It may have been affected from person to person, but it could include a date of birth, social security number, government ID, passport number, driver's license number, and other information that the Department of Public Safety may have collected during its normal course of operations. I apologize. For a small number of individuals, this information may also include biometric data, health or medical information, email addresses with passwords, username and password, security questions and answers, digital signatures, and credit card information with security codes. While Stanford didn't attribute the event to anyone, Akira Ransomware Group claimed responsibility for the attack on the university. And so there's that. And you want to make sure that if you were notified and you were a victim of the Stanford breach, you want to update your passport, you want to update your driver's license number, you could file a claim with Stanford's. They should have a website available for victims of the breach. It should be on the data breach notification letter. They'll probably offer you credit card monitoring. That's fine. You probably have got it from 722 other breaches you've been a part of. What you want to do if really, really sensitive information has been done is to update the document numbers in order to help throttle off essentially identity theft. So if someone opens a credit account using your old ID number, then you'd be able to say, yeah, but on this date, I changed it. I was a victim of the breach and this is fraudulent. And that's one way you're able to fight that off. GitHub users last year exposed nearly 12.8 million authentication and sensitive secrets in just over 3 million public repositories, and the vast majority of them were valid after 5 days. This is according to security experts at GitGuardian, who sent 1.8 million complimentary email alerts to those who exposed secrets, seeing only a tiny 1.8% of those contacted taking quick action to correct the error. The exposed secrets include account passwords, API keys, TLS and SSL certificates, encryption keys, cloud service credentials, OAuth tokens, and other sensitive data that could give external actors unlimited access to various private resources and services, leading to data breaches and potential financial damage. A 2023 Sophos report highlighted that compromised credentials accounted for 50% of the root cause of all attacks that were recorded in the first half of last year. GitGuardian says the secret exposure on GitHub, the world's most popular code hosting and collaboration platform, has followed a negative trend since at least 2020. The leakiest countries were India, followed by the US, Brazil, China, France, Canada, Vietnam, Indonesia, South Korea, and Germany. In terms of which sector lead the most secrets, you'd be surprised to see IT tops the list with a lion's share of almost 66%, followed by education with 20.1%. And then all others, science, retail, manufacturing, finance, public administration, healthcare, entertainment, and transportation accounted for just 14%. The detectors caught about 45% of all secrets that the firm detected in 2023 and are analyzed based on some pie charts. And you can see all of this in the show notes. Generative AI tools have continued their explosive growth in 2023, and they were also reflected in the number of relevant secrets exposed on GitHub last year. They saw a massive nearly 1,200% increase in the number of OpenAI API keys leaked on GitHub compared to 2022, letting you know just how much more people are using OpenAI as part of their infrastructure. They were leaking an average of 46,441 API keys per month. You can imagine what that's done. OpenAI is known for products like ChatGPT and DALL-E, which have widespread use beyond anything else, as well as large language models, all of which is very, very applicable. Now, let's get into our Patch Tuesday recap here. Microsoft, for their end, released patches for 60 different vulnerabilities, including 18 remote code executions. The Patch Tuesday fixed only two critical vulnerabilities, the Hyper-V remote code execution and denial of service flaws. The number of bugs in each vulnerability category for Microsoft were listed as 20. Four of them were elevation of privilege vulnerabilities, 13 were security feature bypass vulnerabilities, 18 were remote code execution vulnerabilities, 6 were information disclosure vulnerabilities, 6 denial of service vulnerabilities, and 2 spoofing vulnerabilities. The total count of 60 flaws does not include 4 Microsoft Edge flaws fixed on March 7th. Further of interest in some interesting CVEs here, CVE-2024-21400 and Azure Kubernetes Service Confidential Container Elevation of Privilege Vulnerability, CVE-2024-26199 or a Microsoft Office Elevation of Privilege Vulnerability, CVE-2024-20671 Microsoft Defender Security Feature Bypass Vulnerability, and if you're using Skype, there's one of those as well. Apple, Cisco, Fortinet, Google, Intel, QNAP, SAP, and VMware all released there are security patches. Let's get into some of those. On the ICS side, there were over 200 vulnerabilities that have been patched between Siemens and Schneider Electric, respectively. Siemens, for their end, published 11 new advisories describing a total of 214 vulnerabilities. A majority of these, 157, are covered in a single advisory describing flaws in the Symantec RF160B mobile reader. The vulnerabilities impact third-party components, and their existence came to light over the past several years. Two other interesting advisories focus on vulnerabilities in the Fortinet FortiOS operating system and FortiGate firewalls. Those have been integrated with Siemens rugged comm switches and routers, and vulnerabilities found in the Fortinet products also impact Siemens rugged comm APE 1808 industrial application hosting platform as well. The list of Fortinet vulnerabilities, CVE-2024-21762 and CVE-2023-27997. And CVE-2022-41328 have been exploited in malicious attacks by sophisticated threat actors, have now been patched on the Siemens side of the house. Schneider Electric only published 2 new advisories. One of them describes 3 vulnerability in the EaseRG T200 RTUs for medium voltage and low voltage public distribution network management. The flaws have critical and high severity, and they can be exploited for account takeovers, arbitrary code execution, and unauthorized access to information. However, the products have not been sold since late 2021 and no patches will be provided. Customers have been advised to upgrade altogether. Fortinet on Tuesday announced patches for multiple vulnerabilities in their own network management and in their own network security and management products, including a critical severity flaw leading to code execution. That's CVE-2023-42789 or an out-of-bounds write issue in the FortiOS and FortiProxy that could allow attackers to execute code or commands via grafted HTTP requests. You want to get that addressed ASAP. Discovered internally by the Fortinet product security team, the issue was addressed alongside CVE-2023-42790, a high-severity stack-based buffer overflow vulnerability that also leads to code execution. All of those have been patched, and you want to make sure if you're an MSP, you get your 40 products lined up for patching, and if you're in the business, as a practitioner, you want to get those done as well. Enterprise software maker SAP on Tuesday released 10 new and 2 updated security notes as part of their March 2024 security patch day, calling attention to serious bugs in business-facing products. Three of the notes marked as hot news, the highest severity rating in SAP's playbook, resolve critical vulnerabilities in the Chromium browser and business client, build apps, and NetWeaver AS Java. The most severe is an update that brings the latest Chrome patches to business client, now running Chromium version 121.0.6167.184. The update resolves 29 security defects in the browser, including 2 critical severity bugs and 15 high severity issues. The company documented the second serious bug, CVE-2019-10744, with a CVSS score of 9.4, a critical vulnerability in the Load-Utility library and build apps. All of those have been addressed by SAP. You want to get those lined up and patched as well. And Adobe, for their end, released their patch Tuesday updates, security updates to fix critical vulnerabilities in multiple enterprise-facing products. Those are in the Adobe ColdFusion, Premiere Pro, Adobe Bridge, and Adobe Lightroom. The company called urgent attention to a mega update for its Adobe Experience Manager software, where they documented at least 46 vulnerabilities that expose users to arbitrary code execution and security feature bypass. So, all in all, a busy, busy week for all practitioners with the Patch Tuesday recap here. All of this is available in the show notes. You can also find it at our Substack at jamesazar.substack.com. That's it for our show this morning. We'll be back tomorrow to wrap up this week. Thank you all for tuning in. Please make sure to subscribe. And most importantly, stay cyber safe.
We love feedback, so make sure to connect with us on social media and subscribe to our podcast on your favorite podcast listening platform.